Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sams, which salutes its client CF Industries for its continuing generous contributions to local communities and charitable organizations in Central Florida each year. I'm Susan Stevens of Hopping Green and Sams Law Firm.
The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. The Fresh from Florida program, supporting Florida's economy by promoting agricultural products grown right here at home, including a variety of seafood harvested by commercial fishermen along Florida's Gulf Coast, on the web at freshfromflorida.com. And Florida Tax Watch, the Florida Council of 100, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plan, proud sponsors of the Prudential Davis Productivity Awards program, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas since 1989. WFSU-FM Tallahassee, and other Florida public radio stations. From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
After more than 40 years at Florida A&M University, band director Julian White is stepping down following the hazing death of Robert Champion.
I'm able to swim in hot grease, but I don't want to inflict that kind of thing, subject my family to that kind of thing.
Floridians are weighing in on President Barack Obama's support for gay marriage.
To hear the president publicly say, "I value you just as much as every other citizen of this country," I think a lot of kids probably had a much better time going to sleep.
The Florida Supreme Court hears a landmark foreclosure case, remember robo-signing. And state officials are doing everything they can to attract more foreign tourists to the Sunshine State. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. The longtime director of Florida A&M University's famed marching band has resigned. The move comes after the arrest of 11 people in the hazing death of a drum major. It also comes as separate investigations continue into the band's finances. We sat down with White today, just a day after he announced his retirement. Lynn Hatter prepared this report.
Dr. Julian White has spent more than 50 years at FAMU, first as a student band member, then later on as a music professor under the band's founder, Dr. William Foster. White was promoted to director of bands and chairman of the school's music department. At almost every milestone in the band's history, from the 1989 Bastille Day Parade in France to winning the prestigious Sudler Award, even playing at Super Bowls and presidential inaugural parades, White has been there. He was even at the helm of the organization the night Marching 100 drum major Robert Champion died after being beaten in a hazing ritual aboard a bus in November.
I've developed a kind of personality, I guess, that I'm able to swim in hot grease. But I don't want to subject my family to that kind of thing. When I don't know what I'm going to read in the newspaper the next morning.
FAMU officials immediately fired White after Champion's death, claiming he was incompetent in handling accusations of hazing in the program. But it was forced to rescind its termination after law enforcement officials told the school it could jeopardize their investigation. White put the blame on university officials for not following up on his warnings of hazing. An investigation into the band's finances is ongoing, which involves about 101 members of the band who weren't actively enrolled at FAMU, but were allowed to travel with the group to Orlando on the trip that ended with Champion's death. Those students received per diem payments, money they shouldn't have gotten due to their enrollment status.
There are some things that I should have caught, but being a faculty member, not at the administrative level to make the kinds of decisions, if we're going to give per diem funds to students, somebody should check that beyond the band director.
White says it wasn't his job to verify the payments, but the university contends, in his position as band director, he should have known so many students shouldn't have been marching. At FAMU, the band is a class just like any other, and students have to enroll in it. White would have had access to those roles.
When that check is issued, the, you know, checks and balances and just financial accounting says that you should verify who these funds are being given to and that they are, in fact, eligible to receive them. And so that was not done. And this is why the adverse publicity comes up to say, well, whose fault was it? Was it the band director's fault? Was it the university's fault? And I don't like to see that kind of controversy at my beloved university.
While he was at the helm of the Marching 100, White says he made several attempts at eliminating the practice of hazing. He suspended students. He wrote letters in the late 1980s. He even formed a task force. But in an interview he gave with news reporters in Tallahassee back in December, he admitted that some of the students he suspended from the ban for hazing, he also let back in.
Sometimes I have made an exception. A student, I believe in the character of the student, and I would allow the student to come back. 98% of those students that were given a second chance did well. A very small percentage, the second chance didn't help.
But in an interview Friday with WFSU, he recollects things differently.
The last group of individuals who were suspended were cleared by the university. However, I did not allow them to return to the band. And so, no, there may have been, I would say, no more than five in my career that I allowed to return after having been convicted of hazing. And the success rate is 100%.
The key words here, convicted of hazing. Back in 2002, Dr. White removed most of his clarinet section because he suspected them of participating in hazing. But in the fall of 2003, many of those people once again took the field. He now says, in hindsight, no one would have been allowed back in once he kicked them out. White has maintained that he shouldn't have been fired over Champion's death, and he pushes back against the university for dismissing him without a hearing and on the grounds of incompetence for not reporting incidents. White says he's produced more than 150 pages of documentation to the contrary.
We had a death by hazing. We didn't have a death by hazing because of the negligence of Dr. Julian E. White. We had a death by hazing because students... violated. They planned to have this hazing ritual on bus C, and so I could not have prevented it because I had no knowledge that it would have occurred.
White says had he known, he would have stopped it. The band director's retirement ends a storied career at FAMU and quite possibly the end of one of the university's best-known programs. The FAMU Board of Trustees has set a meeting for Monday to discuss the fate of the band amid public calls from state officials, such as University System Chancellor Frank Brogan, that the ensemble remain suspended. Reflecting on all that has happened to the band in the past several months, White says he agrees with that. For WFSU-FM, I'm Lynn Hatter. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
President Barack Obama's decision to come out for gay marriage is drawing the expected praise and criticism, depending on who you ask. From member station WUWF in Pensacola, Dave Dunwoody reports that mixed reaction is also being seen at the grassroots level.
Good afternoon to all of you. I'm Diane Sawyer here at ABC News World Headquarters in New York because there is big breaking news from the White House.
At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
President Obama made the revelation during an interview with ABC after repeatedly saying his stance on same-sex marriage had been evolving. He says he made his decision after speaking with a number of people, including First Lady Michelle Obama and their two daughters. The president added that he had made up his mind before Vice President Joe Biden's endorsement Sunday on Meet the Press.
I had hesitated on gay marriage, in part because I thought civil unions would be sufficient, that was something that would give people hospital visitation rights and other elements that we take for granted. And I was sensitive to the fact that for a lot of people, the word marriage was something that evokes very powerful traditions, religious beliefs, and so forth.
I think it is a fantastic show of support to have the leader of the world's most powerful country to come out and clearly state his support for full marriage equality.
Doug Landreth with Gay Grassroots of Northwest Florida calls the president's declaration a monumental moment in time.
He was in the right place and publicly said where he was. And I think that that is going to certainly have a effect of moving other people in this country to come to that understanding.
There are, according to Landreth, about 400 more different rights and responsibilities afforded to marriages than to civil unions. He adds that the word marriage carries more weight and should be used by everyone in reference to a dedicated relationship.
Because marriage is the single word that is instantaneously understood by everyone in our society and does not need any explanation or justification so that other people understand what that means when you describe your relationship.
Cultural conservative leaders who 24 hours earlier won a victory when North Carolina voters rejected same-sex marriage contend Obama's stance will energize their base, which has not been very enthusiastic about presumptive Republican nominee Mitt Romney.
You know, in one respect, I really appreciate the president's position because at least he's come out and he's honest now. I think he's been dishonest with the American people for 4 years. He's come out and said what he really believes all along, so I can at least respect that.
John Stemberger chairs the Florida Coalition to Protect Marriage. He points to recent polls showing Obama and Romney in a virtual dead heat in Florida in contending that the president's stance will be a huge political liability.
I do think it's going to hurt him amongst black Americans. At least in Florida, black Americans were the highest of any identifiable demographic that voted for the marriage amendment 2 back 4 years ago. And it's also going to hurt him amongst the key swing voters in this country, and that's Latino voters, who are very pro-family. They understand this issue.
Gay grassroots Doug Landreth says it's likely that the announcement will inspire some in the lesbian, bisexual, gay, and transgender community still in the closet to come out. But more importantly, he adds, there will be an impact on the community's younger members.
To hear the president publicly say, I value you just as much as every other citizen of this country, I think a lot of kids probably had a much better time going to sleep feeling that their future instantaneously became more safe and secure.
Meantime, Mitt Romney says he has been and remains opposed to same-sex marriage. John Stemberger says this widens the gap between the candidates, along with their previous views on more front-burner issues.
Well, it's clear that the economy and jobs are the number one issue. There's no question about that. But that doesn't mean that all voters are one-dimensional. So I think it does help to contrast the issues on core social issues for people who are not sure who to vote for.
Regardless of who stands where, when it comes to same-sex marriage, one thing is clear: how the issue will impact the November 6th general election and the political futures of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney likely won't be known until at least November 7th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Dave Dunwoody in Pensacola.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the Florida Supreme Court is considering whether banks should be punished for filing fraudulent documents in a foreclosure case dating back to the state's robo-signing scandal.
This court will never know the facts of how deep the fraud went. We only know the tip of the iceberg, and that's exactly why we're here.
While a campaign to educate voters about electing Supreme Court justices is just getting started, another is working to unseat three of them for judicial activism.
The phrase that you might hear people say is legislating from the bench, to where the court essentially becomes a small lawmaking body that is tweaking and changing the Constitution instead of just making sure that it's followed.
And Florida's tourism economy is booming, and you can thank Latin America for much of that business.
And Brazil in particular, when you look at their numbers, they actually increased 38%.
The Florida Supreme Court is considering what some call the most important foreclosure case in the country. Regan McCarthy reports the justices are looking into whether banks should be allowed to refile a case if the lawsuit they originally filed used fraudulent documents.
Experts say the Florida Supreme Court's ruling stands to affect mortgages across the state and could result in possibly thousands of foreclosure cases being reopened. It started with one man, a drywall hanger named Roman Pino, who bought a home in Green Acres, then started falling behind on his mortgage. The bank started proceedings to foreclose, but Pino sued, saying the bank had used fraudulent documents in the case. The bank dismissed the case and filed again, but eventually settled with Pino. Now Pino's lawyer, Amanda Lundergan, says the case is bigger than Pino.
This is not about Mr. Pino. This is about the bank and the fraud that was committed.
The Supreme Court has agreed to look into the matter, noting there are many mortgages that appear to be tainted with suspect documents. And Lundergan agrees.
This court will never know the facts of how deep the fraud went. We only know the tip of the iceberg, and that's exactly why we're here.
Lundergan says a Florida law which allows plaintiffs to dismiss a case once and bring it back later isn't intended to be used as a shield.
It sets up a system whereby every litigant who comes before our courts has not only been condoned but encouraged to lie, to cheat, to steal, knowing that if they are caught, they can simply voluntarily dismiss and absolve themselves of that fraud.
But Justice Barbara Pariente points out the law, which is called voluntary dismissal, reaches far beyond mortgage foreclosure cases.
What you're really asking us to do, and this is where my concern is, you're really asking us to change the way the rule on voluntary dismissal operates.
Generally, voluntary dismissal, which can come up in various kinds of cases, is used for valid reasons, like correcting a clerical error or another honest mistake. And that's the reason the lawyer for the bank, Bruce Rogo, says the law is needed.
We have not had the problems. I mean, this has gone on. This is because it's a mortgage foreclosure case, and because there are a lot of those cases, it has attracted a lot of attention. But I think we have to look at this in the universe of general civil litigation. And this has not been a problem in general civil litigation. People have lived by it. The common law exception of affirmative relief has provided an option if that is necessary. And so there needs to be no change in the law.
And Rogo adds there are other methods the court can use to address the issue of fraud.
There is a sanction of a referral to the Bar Association, which would be another sanction. There could be fees imposed in the second case, if a second case is brought, where there's a contract, as there is here. So there are sanctions that can be imposed. We're not saying that there should be no sanctions if indeed there's been a submission to the court that is an improper submission to the court.
The bank's lawyer argues the fraudulent documents were created during the robo-signing scandal by law firms that hired workers to sign foreclosure documents without really checking them, not the banks. Though the court points out there really is no clear evidence either way. The justices didn't indicate when they plan to rule in the case. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. A $300,000 campaign is underway to educate Florida voters on the importance of knowing all the facts before they elect appeals court judges as well as Supreme Court justices on the November ballot. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the initiative to educate about merit retention elections comes just as conservative opposition is mounting against three Supreme Court justices.
For about the last four decades, Florida has had a merit retention system that allows voters to decide every 6 years whether to keep or reject Supreme Court justices and appellate judges. And if they get more no votes than yes votes, then the governor can appoint a new one. But polling shows about 90% of Florida voters are unaware of the system and skip that section on the ballot. So the Florida Bar partnered with groups like the American Bar Association and the League of Women Voters to announce the start of a new campaign to educate voters about merit retention elections.
We believe promoting fair and balanced elections and fair and balanced information is essential to assist voters in Florida in making informed decisions about the election to retain the three justices and the 15 state court appellate judges.
Scott Hawkins is the president of the Florida Bar. Hawkins also kicked off the campaign with the help of the person who helped start the judicial merit retention process back in the 1970s, former Governor Reuben Askew, who is known as the father of merit retention in Florida. Askew says it's a great process that helps keep politics out of the courtroom, but it wasn't always that way.
Before the 1978 elections, appellate judges were expected to campaign. They had to defend themselves against other candidates, but then face criticism for campaigning for the office, which by its very nature was expected to be separated from political pressure and consideration.
Askew says that practice called into question a judge's ability to be impartial, which he says continues to be debated among the public today regarding the judicial selection process. And Jesse Phillips is among the people who've been questioning a judge's ability to be impartial. He's the head of Restore Justice 2012, a grassroots group that's been campaigning around the state to educate voters about merit retention and help voters see what he calls the judicial activism among most of the state Supreme Court justices.
The phrase that you might hear people say is legislating from the bench, to where the court essentially becomes a small lawmaking body that is tweaking and changing the Constitution instead of just making sure that it's followed.
Restore Justice initially sprang out of a campaign to unseat two Supreme Court justices, Jorge Labarga and James Perry, after they helped remove a proposed constitutional amendment from the ballot in 2010. That amendment could have blocked the federal health care law from taking effect in Florida. The plan didn't work, but Phillips says the group is now focused on the remaining three members who are part of the 2010 majority ruling, Supreme Court Justices Fred Lewis, Barbara Perriente, and Peggy Quince.
They disenfranchise every voter in the state by telling us that we can't vote on this issue. So for court to take that liberty, I think people have to know about that.
Phillips says it's also questionable that the Supreme Court justices have raised $500,000 for the upcoming November retention election, which he says is 6.5 times more than any politician has raised over the first quarter of this year. Dan Stengel, the lawyer representing the justices in their merit retention campaign, agrees that it is unusual for justices to raise such an amount, but says it's warranted after they've drawn such active opposition from groups like Restore Justice.
These justices, they have a group saying that people should vote against them, and they're basing their opposition on statements that are largely not true. And the justices need a forum in order to educate the citizens of Florida about who these justices are, what it is they do for the citizens of Florida, and why they merit return to office on the Supreme Court. And that's an expensive proposition.
The justices are also facing criticism from some who claim they took an hour-long recess and illegally used court employees to notarize paperwork for their campaign just before the deadline passed for them to qualify as candidates. Stengel says they violated no laws and it's universally been done that way. But Representative Scott Plakin is not so sure. He's calling on Governor Rick Scott to ask the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate.
9 newspapers reported that on the surface it would appear that they violated the law. So no one should be above the law in the state of Florida, not a Supreme Court justice, not a governor or anyone else. So this is a very simple request that FDLDE just take a look at it.
Plakin denies his efforts have anything to do with the justices' ruling against his constitutional amendment in 2010 regarding the federal health care reform, especially, he says, since it's coming up as Amendment 1 in 2012. In the upcoming November election, Floridians will have a chance to vote on the 3 Florida Supreme Court justices and the appellate judges from their area in the mayor retention elections. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Finally, while many parts of Florida's economy remain somewhat sluggish, there's one area that's going great guns. Tom Flanagan reports it's the state's number one industry, tourism, and things are expected to keep getting better.
Despite the worldwide economic slowdown, political uncertainties, terrorist fears, and almost every other negative you can think of, U.S. Commerce Secretary John Bryson sees the number of international visitors to the United States growing.
Up to 100 million from the current slightly over 60 million. We estimate that these visitors will spend $250 billion on travel and tourism and related services and activities.
That $250 billion economic impact, by the way, is even more than last year's gross output of the entire American steel industry. To boost the international tourism market even more, Secretary Bryson announced a new promotion and marketing program during a May 10th conference call. He also told reporters federal officials are doing something else to encourage more visitors, especially from overseas.
We're going to work to streamline the entry process into the country through improvements in technology, staffing, and infrastructure. That's critical. The State Department is working to meet visa demand, building on the fact that they have already processed over 1 million more applications in this past year fiscal 2011, than they had in fiscal 2010.
The Commerce Department calls the entire international visitor outreach Brand USA. Eileen Foro is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Visit Florida, the state's public-private tourism promotion company. She says it's the first time there has ever been a unified national campaign to attract foreign tourists.
Brand USA and the whole model was actually
sort of fashioned after Visit Florida, where we are a co-op marketing organization. So we will be able to put Brand USA's tags on our ads. We can be the call to action on their ads.
As a founding state partner in the effort, Faro sees Florida in line for a lot of promotional help reaching international markets. She says that would build nicely on the momentum that began building last year.
And actually, international was the one bright shining star last year because domestic stayed pretty flat. A lot of that growth came from our growth markets, which is Latin America, and Brazil in particular.
Overseas visitors surged by 16 percentage points, and for the first time since the data's been tracked, Faro says Brazil kicked the United Kingdom out of the number one spot for the top overseas origin market for Florida tourists. Brazil's visitation exploded by more than a third, and Faro says the activity favored by many of those visitors did not involve the beach or a theme park.
I mean, they just come here to shop because their economies, especially in Brazil, the cost of living down there is getting quite expensive. And when they come over, especially to Florida, with all the benefits of our outlet malls, et cetera, they really go wild with their purchases.
There could still be a few detours in the seemingly inexorable rise in Florida's international tourism numbers. Britain has slipped back into recession. France has a new government. Spain, Portugal, and Greece remain deeply in debt. And then there's the Trayvon Martin shooting. Gun-shy Brits and Europeans have been known to scrap Florida vacation plans when there's a high-profile firearms case. But Faro says that hasn't happened yet. Overall, she says, Florida's tourism industry is bullish on foreign visitation.
Europe, as you know, is giving us about 3.4 million visitors a year. Latin America is right up there with 3 million after them. And, of course, our tried and true Canada at another record year at 3.3 million Canadians. It's just absolutely astounding. But there again, the strength of their dollar has been hovering at par with ours.
While the U.S. dollar remains relatively weak compared to many other currencies, that makes America and Florida a continuing vacation bargain. That combined with a new national campaign aimed at foreign markets, and Faro says the state's number one industry should have a very good 2012. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Kordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org.
Capitol Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sam's, which salutes its client CF Industries for its continuing generous contributions to local communities and charitable organizations in Central Florida each year. I'm Susan Stevens of Hopping Green and Sam's Law Firm.
The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. The Fresh from Florida program, supporting Florida's economy by promoting agricultural products grown right here at home, including a variety of seafood harvested by commercial fishermen along Florida's Gulf Coast. On the web at freshfromflorida.com. And Florida Tax Watch, the Florida Council of 100, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plan, proud sponsors of the Prudential Davis Productivity Awards program, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas since 1989. WFSU-FM Tallahassee, and other Florida public radio stations. This is the Florida Public Radio Network.